Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by CatholicSingles.com is ringing in the new year with savings for singles. You can save 20% by using the promo code BREADBOX when you register for a new account. Come meet other faithful Catholics and make 2020 a year to remember.
Everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Lisa Hendy and Friends here on Breadbox Media. I'm absolutely delighted to be back behind the microphone today. Had a little visit to my parents last week, and so I was away from the podcast, and it's always just fun to come back into the studio and to have these conversations and to share them with you. And today I know that this chat that we're going to have is going to be a real blessing. So just invite you to sit back and relax as I'm joined by MJ Flood. And MJ Flood is a husband, and he's a father of two little girls and a beautiful baby angel in heaven. He resides in Long Island, New York, and he's a high school literature and writing teacher, and also the author of the work that we'll be discussing today, Where Are You? Finding Myself in My Greatest Loss, which is MJ's first published work. He's also the writer and director of a short film entitled Too Much Noise, and I can't wait to ask a little bit more about that to a short film which is actually in American Sign Language, and which is an award-winning short film. So welcome to the show, MJ Flood.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa.
Oh, it's a real treat. And I was really happy when your book crossed my desk, Where Are You? We're going to jump into discussing that. But always before I dive into kind of the topic at hand, I'd like to ask my guest to share just a little bit more about your faith journey. Maybe for a moment or two, tell us a story about where you are right now in your personal faith journey.
Well, I am a lifelong Catholic. My parents are devout Catholics. I was brought up in the church, of course. Was born in Queens, New York. Was baptized at St. Benny's or St. Benedict Joseph Lebray in Richmond Hill, Queens. Went to Catholic school my whole life. Didn't go to a non-Catholic school until college. But even in college, I couldn't quite get away from it because I was an English major with a philosophy minor, and my concentration of philosophy was theology. They didn't call it theology there. I forget what they called the minor, but it was the study of the existence of God, and so it's all faith. The questions of faith, theology, has always been a part of my life. I am a church goer. I am a member of St. William's Parish here in Seaford, Long Island. Faith is for me always a If I could be as frank as possible, it is always a struggle because it's the constant the battles of faith, the battles of belief, in spite of things that happen. I guess sadly we want to attribute all the good things in life to ourselves. And then the bad things in life, well, you know, that's God's fault. And those are easy arguments, easy meaning they're easy to accept. And just say, if this bad thing happened, clearly I'm not loved. And that's an easy way out. But I'm not I rarely take the easy path. I am definitely a guy who takes the long way to things. So going to church, prayer. We pray every night with my daughters, and we pray before meals, and it's just for me a constant affirmation that there is something more than me. Lots of people call it lots of different things. I believe in God. I believe that God has made this world for me in some respects. I don't mean for me in any individual way, but for me and my family and my work. And I believe that. And so I go to church and I pray as an affirmation that that's the truth. And in spite of some things that happen that want to convince me otherwise.
I love that answer, and I love sort of the reality of it, because I think we're probably kindred spirits. We've never met in person, but a lot of what you just said resonated with me, especially the fact that, you know, I think we can be people of faith and yet struggle. I mean, Jesus, on the night before his passion, struggled, right, and asked, you know, about
no doubt,
asked some
no
big
doubt.
Questions.
And I remember.
Yeah, I think that's.
I remember. Okay. Just a few years ago, several years ago now, my goodness, but, you know, I read an article about Mother Teresa and her doubts. And I said, if she can doubt, I can definitely doubt. And it's the point, I guess, faith is, and when I say the word struggle, it's an effort. Mm-hmm. It's got to be an effort. You know, just like all good things, really, exercise, diet, marriage, relationship, love, friendships, they can all be work. You know, that's all right for, you know, if faith comes easily, it's, I don't know. I don't want too many things that come easily. I want to work for what I get. So if I'm going to get something out of faith, then it's all right for me to work at it.
Beautiful. Well, I want to dive into talking about the book. The book, again, is called Where Are You? Finding Myself in My Greatest Loss. And for our listeners, I want you to know that I'll have a link in our show notes so that you can get a hold of this. MJ, tell me kind of, you know, well, I guess, first of all, we should begin with the story of Sophia Michelle's life. And then we'll get into how this story became something that you wanted to share with everyone else. So just tell us a little bit about the life of this little girl.
Sure. Well, Sophia is my wife, Tara, and my first pregnancy. So we were married in 2004 and conceived in 2008. So she is our first pregnancy, and anybody who has planned a family or not planned it for that matter, it's difficult to explain, I guess, or maybe I can just assume everybody has a similar experience, that when you first know you're pregnant, it is the greatest thrill of my life, of our life together. You know, you buy a house and you buy your first car and you get your first job, and those are all great things, and they really can establish your life. But that first pregnancy test that my wife took, she's like, you know, she says, I think we're pregnant. And I said, oh my gosh, all right. And she takes a pregnancy test and you're over the moon. You can't, it's just great. And again, like I said, same thing about faith, you know, having a family, same thing. It's not there are no struggles. There are immense fears. Do we have enough money? Do we live in the right home? Are we going to be good parents? So all of that is wrapped, all of those fears and the ensuing arguments, obviously, you know, that's all part of it. But it is, joy is not enough of a word. And I can't think of another word right now, you know, it is unlike anything else. And we wanted it, and we were instantly mommy and daddy right away, you know, before Tara was even showing. We were mommy and daddy, and we felt it, and we wanted it. And sadly, 28 weeks later, Tara told me one night she didn't feel the baby moving, and I ignorantly rationalized it. I said, well, the baby's bigger now. You're not going to feel her moving. No, I said that without knowing or having any real knowledge of the activity of a baby in the womb. You know, speaking without knowing sometimes is a flaw of mine. So she probably would have liked to have gone to the hospital. But I told her to relax, and it'll be more stress for her to go to the hospital at 9 o'clock at night than it would be for her to just relax and have a good sleep. And we went to work the next day, and she called me from work, and she said she doesn't feel the baby moving. The doctor told her to go to the hospital. So I drove to her work, and sadly, I brought her to the hospital, and the nurse did the ultrasound, and told us that there was no heartbeat, that the baby's gone. And that was that. I mean, we were crushed, and little did we know that at that stage, 28 weeks, you know, Sophia had 10 little fingers and 10 little toes and a nose and eyes and ears and the whole thing. And we, in an additional trauma, you know, you have to deliver that baby, mm-hmm. you know. Tara had a push, you know, and I only a decade more later do you realize what a I'm gonna use a word here because to think of the right word will take too long, but to realize that that's a blessing in a strange way to have that physical delivery is you know, I wonder if we just thought would the baby okay, well, the baby's not alive, so she's just going to disappear, right? She's just going to disappear. She's not there anymore, right? When the nurse says the baby's gone, I think that as parents, you take it quite literally. Oh,
right.
I mean, that's
yeah.
devastating to us, and we're crushed. But she's not there anymore, right? We take it literally. But no, that's a figurative expression, and we had to deliver a baby, and we held the baby once we delivered her, without ever having taken her first breath or her first cry. We held her, and it was devastating. That's the only thing to say. Now, after going through some, we went to bereavement, and we'd met many people who'd been through the same and similar scenarios. Not everybody looks at it the same way. You know, some people are able to compartmentalize, if that's a word, and say, all right, well, this didn't work. Let's try again. Tara and I, you know, we're unable to look at it that way. And we hurt and are continue to hurt. It is still a loss for us. We have two beautiful girls. We are, you know, over the moon, you know. Sadness for loss like this doesn't mean you have to suffer every second and see no joy in anything, or although there is a point or an amount of time where that is the case, or seems that it will be the case forever, we are, you know, filled with joy in our family life. But there is always something missing. I regularly wish that all three of my girls were here with me. And,
right.
On a daily basis, in fact, I would say, I think of her and say how old she would be now, or what grade would she be in, or, you know, those kinds of things. So that is the short story of our baby, Sophia.
Her beautiful life. Well, let me ask you this. So it's interesting. It's interesting to hear the story of a stillborn child from the perspective of a father. I have a great blessing in my work to read lots of different types of work, and, you know, to have read stories of families who've lost children at a variety of ages, and to journey with some of those families along the way too. But I'll say that I don't know that I've heard too often the story told from a dad's perspective. What was it? I mean, you are a writer, you are a creator and a storyteller in your work, and it's obviously a passion of yours. What was it about this story that made you want to share it for others to experience through the memoir, through Where Are You?
Yeah, well, I guess this, the answer to the question is a few years old. I would say 2015 or 16, I was asked by a bereavement counselor at a hospital nearby, who I'd come to know, this counselor, at in our own experience with bereavement groups. She'd asked me if I would not mind maybe addressing, giving an address at a annual bereavement a memorial that she hosts at the hospital. I very gladly said yes. So I delivered a speech, an address, my thoughts about loss and healing, and I got some very positive feedback, you know, and it made me feel good. It made me personally feel better to share. And then Somebody else asked me to do it again, maybe a year or so later, or several months or a year later. So I did it again, and again, lots of people were so grateful and thankful for, you know, oh, thank you for sharing. And again, I said, it made me feel better. I felt so good. I left these addresses, these memorials, and I felt good. You would think that you'd leave a memorial and be torn to shreds and devastated and want to go crawl in a bed and stay in bed for a week. But I felt good. I felt powerful, you know. Again, poor word, but you know what I mean. Empowered is probably the better word, you know. I felt good about it, and I said, this is my baby. This is my daughter. This is her legacy. If talking about her can help others and help me, I want to do it. So that was, say, a couple of years ago. And then a friend of mine at work said, you know, why don't you write down your thoughts? And so I wrote down, write down your thoughts about loss, about the baby and things like that. So I wrote them down and I showed them to him, and he encouraged me. He said, you should send this around. He said, you could publish this. He said, this is not just a story of sadness. This is inspiring, you know? And to me, I said, nobody wants to hear me moaning and groaning about loss and sadness. But I approached it in the same way I approached those speeches. If anybody can be helped by it, and if I can be helped by it, then it might be a good, productive exercise. Just a good exercise, you know, really not, you know, not too unlike exercise, working out, you know, it does me good, you know, it's healthy. And so I did it, and the feedback has been, I'm very grateful for the positive feedback I've gotten, but I will say that in a personal way, it's possible that it's changed the way I think, or it's allowed the way I think to emerge. And I said, you know, this is my baby, and if it's a legacy for her, then that makes me happy and proud.
The interesting thing about this book is, I mean, it's linear in a sense, and you share, you know, so many feelings and emotions in it, but you have a few moments in it that particularly stand out for me because they're not necessarily what we'd expect from a traditional memorial. And one of those is a segment of the book or a chapter that you call Loss Stew. Wow, it took my breath away. So here you kind of just go through a recipe of sorts for, you know, what you're experiencing. And this is, you know, what perhaps make this not like any other memoir that I've read, because it's so you and so personal. So how, I'm in a way you've just answered this, but how do you decide what's too close to your own heart to share, what elements of a struggle with you know, depression and anxiety to include in something like this?
I have to tell you that that's a great question, but a difficult question, because I still, from time to time, will look at the book, or on occasions where I'm asked to think about the book or read from the book. There are still times where I'm like, wow, I can't believe I actually said that, you know, or I say, you know, I really should have included this too. So it is the book in many respects is an emotional life that it is, and your emotional life is never crystal clear. Very few people look at their emotional lives and say, this is my emotional life. So the book was written and structured without a true sense of narrative. So the approach, so trying to answer the question you've asked, I'm sorry, I usually have a way of running around, but my approach to the book was, I cannot write it in a chronological narrative. I can't do that because it's not that way for me. So I tried to make it as emotional as possible. So it is at times chaotic, I think. The chapter that you mentioned, Lost Stew, is not written in, you know, it's not even prose, I guess, right? It's not even, you know, line to line, margin to margin prose. It's just a list of ingredients, really. And some of those ingredients are aggressive, you know. You bring up that chapter, and some of the language is colorful, you might say. Mm-hmm. And And so, for example, even word choice alone, trust me, there have been plenty of priests and nuns and my mother. Oh, my goodness. I still think she doesn't think I know that word, you know. So she read it and I showed it to her. And thankfully, she recognized that this is the experience of the feeling. You know, this is the experience. Now, my mother lost her son, my brother,
yes.
And I hope I'm not jumping any of your questions, but my brother Brian died when I was 17, and so she lost a son. And I think that when you ask me the question, how do I make a decision, what to include, I think I had to trust that people that experience loss like this, we have similar feelings. And I think that was a big step to my understanding my heart, understanding my mind, choosing to write a book, is that I'm not alone. And people want to hear this, even if it is jarring at times. You know, my memoir is jarring at times. I want people to read it and at times say, I don't know if I know what he's talking about here. You know, where is this story going? Well, welcome to the world of grief. Where is this story going? You know, where are you? Is the title of the book. And now it's a reference to myself, but maybe it's a reference to the reader too. Are we aware of where we are?
I think sometimes to our relationship with God as well, because one of the things that I was thinking as I read that particular Lost to chapter was just that, first of all, that I think the colorful language is part of what is an internal dialogue with God sometimes. I mean, I don't know that I've ever said that particular word, but I've said lots of others that I wouldn't necessarily say to my mom. But you know, it's real. And that's what a story like this or work like this is meant to be. And that's where people connect with it, because we connect to our own feelings of brokenness or hurt or despair or joy or, you know, delight or whatever. You share your feelings and they're real. And that's what, you know, what takes us there. I wanted to mention that the book has a beautiful endorsement from Gary Janssen. You know, on the cover, this is included, beautifully written, poignant, heartfelt, and ultimately spiritually uplifting. I'll say, if Gary Janssen, who's one of my favorite authors, endorses something then sold, I'm gonna go ahead and get it. You know, but the book wasn't quick in coming, and you took some time with it. So now that it's out, what kind of a reaction are you getting from people that have had a chance to read it?
Well, it has been positive, which is great. And a lot of people have mentioned to me, I'm getting two sort of groups of responses. It's the familiar response, for example, somebody might come to me and said, I felt the same exact way. I felt the same exact thing. Or the other group of, thank you for writing this. I had no idea that's what it was like. Both of those are great responses for me. I just saw an old friend of mine the other night, and she said to me, you know, I read your book, it was so beautiful, thank you. She said, but you know, my sister lost a baby and we never spoke about it. I just thought it was, you know, she kept it under wraps and I just thought she was okay with it. She said, so I spoke to her after I read the book. And it was the first time I ever spoke to her about her baby. I was like, wow, that's awesome. That's awesome.
And I think that, you know, this being seen as a tool, if you will, for helping other people along their path to healing has to be helpful to you in your own journey toward healing.
No doubt.
Yeah. Well, sadly, we're running short on time.
Okay.
Again, the name of the book is Where Are You? Finding Myself in My Greatest Loss. The author is our guest today, MJ Flood. MJ, maybe you can share some ways that people can get in touch with you and where the best place is to get the book before we let you go.
Sure. Yes. Thank you. If you wish, you can email me. It is mjflood2@gmail.com. MJFlood.com. I'm also on Facebook, MJ Flood on Facebook. You can get me there. The book is available on Amazon and on Barnes and Noble. But hey, there's always little mom and pop bookstores in the neighborhoods that, you know, if you want to go in, they'll order it for you. I am a great supporter of the local bookstores, so don't forget about them. They will absolutely order it for you. The publisher is Enroute, E-N-R-O-U-T-E, Enroute Books and Media. You can contact the bookseller itself if you wish to order books. There are sort of group discounts if you run any kind of a retreat group or bereavement group or schools and churches, things like that. Certainly can get discounts.
Great. And definitely, friends, we'll have links in our show notes to all of that information and to the various ways that you can learn more about the work that MJ is doing. MJ, any kind of closing thoughts before we let you get back to the rest of your day?
Well, I just want to thank you for the work that you do, the great show. Anybody's work whose design is to reach people and provide a constructive or productive outlet for people, I think is great work, and I just appreciate being on the show. I'd love to continue. If we can talk another time, maybe, that would be great, and I'll be in touch with you. And I just want to thank your listeners for listening, and just being open to people who might seem closed. Sometimes grief is even for people who haven't necessarily lost something. A lot of us are hurting in a lot of different ways, and if we can be open to each other, I think that we'll all be better off. I'll tell you what, Lisa, and I'm going to, because I'm a bonehead and I'm terrible at promotion, this is why people hire people to do things like this. But I think the email is, I may have misspoke, so I'm going to repeat it if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
The email is mjflood02@gmail.com. If I said it right the first time, I'm sorry to repeat it. But if you wish to reach out to me, please send me an email. I'd love to chat.
Yeah, awesome. I'm so glad you repeated it, and we'll definitely have it in our show notes too. MJ, thank you so much for your honesty, your transparency, for sharing your heart, and for leading us closer to God and closer to one another through the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure being with you today.
Thanks. Well, friends, that is it for this week's episode of the podcast. I'm going to ask you a couple of favors. First of all, if you've enjoyed the show, please do consider leaving a review or a rating. And if you didn't enjoy it, do that too. It helps me to continue to improve. If you've got a guest you want to suggest, you can reach out to me in a variety of different ways. My favorite is on social media at Lisa Hendy. And definitely go show some love for my friends at Breadbox Media. They host this podcast and lots of other great ones. So check out all of the great stuff over there at breadboxmedia.com. Thank you for your recent prayers for my parents and our family's journey. And just thank you for being you and for being a friend. God bless you. Have an awesome week.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small-batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Breadbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.